Game On on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein.
Thanks to the amazing Jenny Green. She's dead right. Every pot has a lid. It's Wednesday, the 23rd of September. Happy birthday, Jake O'Callaghan. It's Game On.
My mother used to say, every sock has a shoe. Now, coming up today, Donegal's ready to dissect the Pro 14 fixtures as doubts hang over the season ahead.
We set the scene on the eve of the Dubai duty-free Irish Open as Shane Lowry plays a home soil again.
Plus, we're talking sport funding with Mary O'Connor, and we've a unique Bronx tale in the GAA.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM, and we'd love to hear from you tonight, especially because we've dietitian Orla Walsh on with us. So she's keen to take any of your questions on 51552 or tweet at GameOn. And we've a goodie bag, Marie.
Go on. Yes. I love a goodie bag.
I love the way that you know, but you're playing with it anyway. Yes, it is full of Green Farm goodies in this bag, which is 100% natural, high in protein, and it's got all the white food range. So it also covers their brand new snack pack, which is available in Tesco's from today. Imagine that.
Very good.
Probably been in the centre for months, but thanks for catching up, Tesco's. Shameless plugging.
It'll be very handy to have snack packs now when you're doing the old winter training.
Yes, very true. And when there's 23 grams of protein in everyone, sure, where are you going?
Yeah, that's probably, considering how much you eat, that's probably only a small bit of the protein intake.
Well, that's one of the good questions that I'm looking forward to Orla chatting to her later on. It's just, you know, the change of season. I always think come winter, I end up eating like a horse. But
comfort eating.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think it's because it's the dark nights and the fire is on and you're sitting inside a little bit earlier, you know, you're not out and about in the sunshine anymore, and you end up reaching for that something with a cup of tea after the stew.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happens to everybody. Yeah. Not just the retired players, Donegal.
Absolutely. Well, you've seen my eating habits and you're not impressed.
I'm actually still not over it, to be honest.
To be fair to you, you couldn't have greater extremes. The way I eat and the way Ruby eats. So, I'd say you were looking at it going, what's going on here?
I did actually veer towards copying what you were eating, which was not good. So I needed to get a bit of a happy medium there. So
when myself and Jenny started going out first, she threw on 4 to 5 pounds within no time. And she was there, I just can't be eating when you do. So
to get smaller plates. Now, I haven't talked to you in a few days. You haven't been around, but a lot has happened since then. Friday, we were chatting about how much Leinster were going to beat Saracens by. Yeah. And then that didn't happen.
That didn't happen, no.
Not at all. So, were you surprised?
That's why I went to groan, Marie. Just rugby hasn't been going well. Was I surprised? Yes, I was. But a bit like we spoke on that Friday, I think Saracens kind of, you knew what they were coming with. It was confrontational and it was bullying. And I think that's the worst way when you lose games like that, you know?
Do you mean that it was confrontational and bullying, or because you knew what they were going to bring and you weren't ready for it?
You knew what they were going to bring and you can't answer it. That's what hurts. Because you know they're coming with that. You know they're going to go after your scrum. And then they just lift the energy, around it. So it was a bad loss. And even more worryingly, we've heard, you know, what Philip Brown has said, but just for the Pro 14 as well, not to have any teams in the knockout stages, it's not healthy, it's not good. And to be honest, it's a worrying time for rugby. We see, you know, today that Australia have lost their main sponsor, Qantas, who've been with them for 30 years. So rugby's in a difficult spot and, it is worrying.
It does seem like that it is one of the more vulnerable ones because of the owner structure and the fact that so much of their income comes from gate receipts. And, you know, you're seeing Bill Sweeney today, the RFU chief executive, saying that rugby clubs at the heart of communities are in danger of disappearing forever.
Yeah. And you see, there's different models going on, Marie, and the English model is different. So their clubs aren't aligned to the unions. So the clubs aren't worried about grassroots. They're only worried about their academies. Whereas the RFU were saying, we've got to bring everyone through. We've got to have young boys and girls playing the game. But that seems to be falling down because no one wants to invest their money there. So look, I suppose we're selfish and we look at the Irish model, but you know, when you hear Philip Brown saying that he is genuinely concerned for the professional game, and that's a worry for me, because I was lucky enough to play in a team I loved around people I cared about, and that's what you want. But then I went to Ulster and it's totally different. You feel just like a professional. You know, you're just there to do a job. Whereas I think the beauty of Irish teams is that they play for where they're from and where they care about. And it's something we have to kind of protect and look after. But it, like we say, and we'll be chatting about it shortly, it's very hard to try to balance. Sport is an industry and rugby is just one part of it. So, but when you see the likes of Qantas moving away from their sponsorship with Australia today, that's a 30-year sponsorship. But you can kind of understand it, can't you? Like when you see what's going on in Clare and Cork and, you know, just airline industry.
And the airports. And I suppose everything is compounded then when Boris Johnson was compounded when Boris Johnson made that announcement yesterday that it could be 6 months before crowds are in games. And even at that, you would wonder if there are crowds there in 6 months, how many are going to be there? Because I can't even imagine packed stadiums come the Six Nations next year, just given where we are. But the costs are of running the associations are what really takes me by surprise. And then you read stories like Gerry Thornley's story yesterday about how some of the clubs are going to need private jets to get to games. Yeah. Like the cost of that. So chartering a plane could cost 15,000 to 20,000 for the participating provinces or clubs. And they won't be able to sublet seats as they might have done in the past. So now he's saying that hiring private planes will reduce the cost of accommodation, but still.
Yeah. We used to be lucky enough to get charters to some flight and they were a privilege. You knew it. You knew that if you were lucky enough to get the charter, meant you were able to get home to your own bed. But the only thing that breeds that is success. And you're right, Marie. We used to have journalists or maybe paying supporters that would try to get on the same flight, which would maybe cover the kind of cost of it. But it's trying to get the balance in running it. And we actually did get fixtures today for the Guinness Pro 40.
Which is good news.
Yeah, brilliant. And there's good excitement. There's good games. Leinster champions kick it all off against the Dragons in Dublin on Friday, the 2nd of October. Ulster campaign kicks off at home against Benetton. Munster take on the Scarlets. And Connacht are hosting Glasgow. So there's a few interesting ones in this, though. I got a bit of a giggle. There's Monday Night Rugby.
Yeah, what do you think about that?
Yeah, I like it for sitting down watching it.
Yeah, because Mondays, they're always a bit of a... You're looking for something to watch on a Monday.
You're badly stuck on a Monday.
You are, yeah.
We love prime time, but enough.
Like, often it could be highlights or you're catching up on stuff, but to have a live game...
And to be fair, I watched Gerry Flannery's Harlequins versus Sale. There was... You know, it's nice to watch a sport you're interested in. For me, it was great to watch it, and I know it wasn't an exact game, but... Munster will start that action when they take on Cardiff on the 22nd, so that'll be the first game on a Monday night. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Something to look forward to, Donegal.
There's
GAA fixtures announced as well today, so the Munster Council confirmed fixture details for the upcoming provincial inter-county season, and I just can't get used to looking at fixtures for Munster Championship in October and November. Like, even just to see a Munster final taking place on Sunday the 15th of November at 4 o'clock is absolutely crazy. I don't think I'll ever feel normal about that. But like as we said there a minute ago, it is really brilliant to have some fixtures to look forward to. So Clare and Limerick's Munster Senior Hurling Quarter Final will double up as the Alliance League Division 1 final. That'll be on in Semple Stadium on the 25th of October. Cork and Waterford will face each other in a semi-final at the same venue the following Saturday at 3:30. And then the winner of Clare and Limerick's match will then and play Tipperary in November 1st. It's going to be strange, but we're just going to get used to it. Yeah.
I'll be honest with you, Marie. Coming into the winter, I think we're going to be so thankful a championship, aren't we? Like, we're going to need something.
Tonica, if we can get there, to Monday Night Rugby and the Munster final in November, we'll be laughing.
But to be fair, we couldn't have had better sport this weekend. I was listening to you chatting to Sam Bennett last night. Like, you can't put a value on that sense of pride you get when you see someone Irish doing something incredible and something special. And it just, I know we're going to be chatting about money and sport and the importance of it, but I think there's things that can't get measured in value that are really important, and that's a sense of pride of where you're from. And, you know, Sam Bennett did that for us this weekend, and, you know, with hopefully a championship coming around the corner, Cork winning the double, you know, everyone down here being happy.
This year for it.
This year.
No, I agree. I really enjoyed chatting to him last night. He's given us a lot of joy over the last few weeks when we badly needed it, and they're the things that get us through the tough times, I think, and gives us a distraction from reality. So it is really important to have it, and hopefully we'll continue to have it over the winter anyway. Right, yeah. We're going to take a quick break, and loads to come in the show.
Get your questions in, 51552, Orla's chatting all things nutrition.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. To any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Welcome back. The Dubai Duty Free Irish Open gets underway at Galgorm tomorrow. And to run through what lies in store, we are joined by Gary Murphy and Greg Allen, who is coming to us live from the bubble. Greg, to you first. Tell us about life in the bubble up in Galgorm.
Well, it's interesting in lots of ways because I expected it to be quite difficult, and it is, and it's so difficult in fact that quite a few players really have railed against it. And I was speaking to Paul Dunn today about it. You know, there's things you just don't really think of, the fact that the caddy and the player, because of the buddy system they have, you can really only have breakfast and dinner with the same person, and you want to get on awful well with your caddy, you know. It's not, you know, and it's really, you know, it's a whole day together. Look, that's only part of it. I'll go back to my own situation. I had a COVID-19 testing kit sent to me a week ago. That test, I sent it away and it came back negative. And then when I arrived here yesterday, I had another COVID test on site. Had to wait 3 hours, which I think is pretty good. And I got the result in my email in my hotel where I went to self-isolate. And then I got the good result, thankfully, and I came to the course. And here we are in a situation where social distancing is being patrolled in a fairly draconian manner, which is great. You know, it's the way it should be. And mask wearing indoors, compulsory, obviously, but really rigorously patrolled. I don't know how many other sporting events are as well patrolled as this, because I haven't got out much, as you can gather over the last few months, to experience other sports. But this is really, really tough on those players who are doing it week in, week out. They're tested before every single one of these tournaments over the last, 2 months. And I think there have been 9 tournaments between the UK, Spain and Portugal who have had these, restrictions and protocols in place. It's great because golf is going ahead. You know, let's put everything into context. It's we're going to have an Irish Open. That looked like something that might not happen a few weeks ago even.
Yeah, Greg, you mentioned it there. It is great, not only for Irish golf having the duty, the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, but also for European golf.
Well, I think the European Tour know that they've got TV contracts as well that they have to kind of hopefully, you know, execute this year, and fingers crossed there'll be spectators next year, and we'll have events which will really have a bit of vibrancy about them in terms of spectator, you know, attendance. But they've got to get through this season, the European Tour. It's vital that they do. Their finances, I think, are critically, you know, dependent on this being a successful, you know, sequence of tournaments. And they've been pretty successful, albeit with very small prize funds. From a perspective of the Irish Open on the European Tour, this is one of the longest running tournaments. It's 93 years of a history. It's 46 years in a row that it's been run since 1975, when it was revived in 1975, when it was held at Woodbrook and Christy O'Connor Jr. won. And, you know, it nearly went under during the financial crisis. I think it was staged in Killarney about 10 years ago when there was €1.5 million in prize fund. And here it's got €1.25 million in prize fund, which is a pittance, if you can talk about millions being a pittance. But it's 1/5 of last year's prize fund. It's not a pittance, obviously, but it's 1/5 of last year's prize fund. John Rahm took away €1.18 million last year, and the entire prize fund is €1.25 million here this week. So the fact that it's happening is good.
Gary Murphy also joins us. Gary, when I think of the Irish Open, I just go straight back to Le Hinch last year and the sunshine and the glamour and John Rahm and the big names. But at the same time, as Greg said, it's just brilliant that it's on.
It is, Marie. Your debut on Game On, if memory serves me right.
That's exactly right, yeah.
Yeah. It was, yeah, I mean, it's just, Lynch last year was so special, almost impossible to improve on, really. And as Greg alluded to, we're in, you know, completely different times. And it's just great that we do have a Dubai Duty Free Irish Open this week. It's a shame Mount Julie didn't get the opportunity because of the restrictions in the Republic of Ireland, but great for Galgorm. I think a resort that has, you know, put the time in, it supported the Challenge Tour massively over the last number of years, and it's great that they get their break and they'll be seen on the world stage. But, you know, it's just a different Irish Open, and I think it's amazing that Shane Lowry has come home to play, and he will be the, you know, the much needed stardust that is going to be there this week, because the field is not where it would normally be.
Absolutely. And Greg actually caught up with Shane a little bit earlier. Let's hear from him.
It actually ended up, the date that it's in is absolutely perfect for me, because it was the kind of time I was planning on coming back from America anyway. But I think no matter what happened, I would have went down my way to come back and play. Look, I feel like I need to come back and play this tournament. I feel like I want to come back and play this tournament, no matter where it is, no matter when it is, because this is a huge part of my career. And, you know, everybody knows how much of a proud Irishman I am. And, like, I suppose you're here now. I'd dearly love to win this tournament again. So this week is as good as any, I suppose.
It just happens to come the week after a pulverising US Open. And I can see the look on your face at that question. How are the fatigue levels, or the energy levels, I should say?
Yeah, I'm okay. I got home and had a couple of good nights' sleep. And, you know, I think I'll be okay once kick-off tomorrow. But, yeah, look, last week was brutal. Last week was just so tough. It was one of those weeks where, you know, mentally and physically, everything about it was just draining. So it was nice actually to have a couple of days of not playing golf, and I'll go out today now and see where my game's at. But I like to think that this course is going to feel a little bit easier than Wingfoot did last week. So I'm trying to make as many birdies as I can this week, because there were few and far between last week. But it was just, look, I thought it was a great venue, thought it was a great tournament, and you know, even though I shot 15 over, I was still happy-ish with my performance. I was happy with 80% of the golf that I played, I felt was good enough. But you know, the other 20%, when you play 20% bad stuff around there, it just really hurts you. So I've moved on from that now, and I'm kind of focused on this week and giving my best shot.
Greg, when we think of the Irish Open, we go back to 11 years ago when Shane won it as an amateur. How good is it that he's coming back and giving it the lift that it deserves?
Yeah, Shane wasn't ever really going to not come back. I think that's pretty clear. The Irish Open launched him as a professional golfer, because within 4 days of winning, he had the press conference to turn professional. That was back in 2009. And it's not that he owes the Irish Open anything. In fact, the Irish Open back then probably owes him €500,000, because that was the amount of money that he would have won if he had turned pro the day of the Irish Open starting. He had to give up that because he was an amateur. But Shane Lowry coming back has lifted this Irish Open in particular to really a decent height that we can... You've got to know him arriving today, watching him arrive, very obviously under the radar, because there are no spectators, but there he was carrying the claret jug into the press conference, and suddenly you felt, wow, we've got a bit of star power. And obviously, Paddy Carrington's arrived and played a practice round as well. So there's more than Shane as being star power as former Open champions. In fact, we've got Michael Campbell here as well, who's the New Zealand for US Open champion from 2005. So, you know, there's a few major winners here. It's not all Shane, but Shane's presence here has really, really lifted the event. And we just have to hope that he has recovered from last week, because he played four rounds last week, 76, 70, 77, 72. His rounds of 70 and 72 were among the best rounds of the day on Friday and Sunday. So he actually did play some really good golf around Winged Foot. So I think he brings just enough form to have a chance here this week. He just has to get over the fatigue element, and obviously a bit of jet lag might settle in. One thing he will be interested to see, as he's playing his practice round right now, he hasn't played the course before, he's just out there at the moment. The rough here isn't far off US Open rough. It is that thick, it's that deep. I walked the course yesterday. But if you find the fairway, it's hugely scoreable golf course, and there could be some low rounds this week.
Gary, is it enough time when you throw in the travel for him to recover adequately enough to put in a performance?
Yeah, it is. He's been at it, 11 seasons now. He's well used to playing with jet lag, and you just conserve your energy. I don't think he'll do a huge amount of practice he'll warm up and play and do very little afterwards, and try to conserve his energy. But it's just the nature of the beast. When you're a professional golfer, it's a life on the road. You have your little systems in place to conserve as much energy as possible. And really, you know, that time he's going to be out on the golf course, he's going to be giving it everything, and it'll be downtime afterwards and plenty of rest and recuperation, and he'll be fine. He's well used to preparing for tournaments like this.
Gary, just on that, he's saying that he's happy with his game, even though that his scores mightn't reflect it. How do you think he's doing?
I think he has been playing a lot better in recent times than his results suggest. Even last week, on Saturday, he was one under par for 15 holes and did all his damage in three holes. He didn't hit a green out of the rough last week. And if you think to Bryson DeChambeau being three over par when he missed a fairway for the week, it's just remarkable. So, as always, when someone wins a golf tournament, you know, there's a huge element of luck. He didn't really seem to get a whole lot of it last week. His game is not that far away. And as Greg said, the fact that the course is scoreable, he'll feel that if he can get into position, the golf course will seem way easier than what it did last week. And that will help him change his focus from battling and scrapping around, trying to not drop shots. So his mindset will change to trying to be more aggressive. And, you know, I really hope Shane has a big week. It would be fantastic for the tournament, for not just for Lowry, any of the homegrown players can have a run at the title come Sunday afternoon, but I think especially if Lowry can be in the mix.
Gary, you did mention Bryson DeChambeau there, and from what I gathered, there was a bit of talk in the bubble about him. Greg caught up with Shane Lowry and Padraig Harrington about it.
Look, I think what he did was incredible. I thought Sunday for him, I mean, to shoot three under when nobody else shot under par, I mean, there's nothing more needs to be said. People are going to go on about how far he's hitting it, that he's just bombing and gouging it, but I think he hit a lot of fairways. Well, in relative terms, like, I think he was maybe top 20 in driving accuracy, which people actually don't see, and he also finished top 5 in putting. So I think you need to do that type of stuff to win tournaments like that. I only hit 50% of fairways last week, but I was 10th in driving accuracy. As regards to the field, the fairways were just really hard to hit, you know, a lot of crosswinds, a lot of doglegs. So I think what Bryson did was incredible, and whether people, you know, like him or don't, I think he's one of the best players in the world, and he will be for a long time, because not only does he hit 330 yards through the air, he hits it straight as well.
Rory did this in 2010, Tiger did this in 1996. If people didn't see the writing on the wall then, they were foolish. But Bryson had that speed in him. I'd seen him with that speed before, but the bulking up added a great story to it and maybe gave him the stability to use it. And, he's run with it and he's getting the glory for it. But I think you've got to understand, Bryson is a great player who's hitting it long. You know, there's plenty of players who are longer than him. There's plenty of players who are faster than him, but they're not great players. So that's the difference. He is a great player first and foremost. He was already a tournament winner, you know, when he started to work on his full potential in terms of speed. But there'll be dime a dozen in 5-10 years' time. There are dime a dozen in colleges now. They're actually, you go to all regular clubs in Ireland, you'll find guys just as fast. They mightn't be able to play the game, but what you've seen with Bryson is a really, really talented player who believes in himself, who is now fast. But I'd hate to be trying to compete with these guys in 10 years' time. You know, there'll be somebody coming out here with 200 mile an hour ball speed who can play the game. There's some out there already with that, but there'll be some coming out who will be able to do it and actually be a great player and back it up.
Gary, really respectful there from Shane and Padraig. We've chatted about buddy systems, the bubble. Is everyone now going to have to start eating biltong and pumping weights? Is that the future of golf?
Well, I think they're probably, they've all been at it really, Donegal, for I would say 4, 5 to 6 years anyway. McIlroy made his decision in 2009, possibly maybe 2000, end of 2008, to get in the gym and change his body shape. The very same way as Tiger did when Tiger first came out, he was a skinny kid, and he's bulked up, and everyone has copied him. That's just the way the sport has gone. But Harrington makes the perfect point. You know, there's a lot of guys out there can hit it far, but they're not great players. DeChambeau is a great player. You see any of the long drive champions, they're not able to play golf. They're able to hit the ball ferocious distance, but they can't play. Guys will try to change the game to hit it further. And we've seen, you know, not great players, but extremely good players and prolific winners go down that road, and it's really affected them. I think the fact that DeChambeau, with his scientific background, along with Chris Como, with his scientific background, they've really found a combination that they can both understand and execute, and that is the subtle difference, really, and that's why he's been so successful.
Greg, what are your thoughts as a long-time golf follower?
Well, firstly, what Bryson DeChambeau is doing, I think, is a complete game-changer, in the sense that the way that he dominated a golf course that shouldn't have been dominated. He was a 5-foot putt away on Saturday from shooting four rounds in the 60s around winged foot, which obviously has never been done before. It was astonishing what he did on Sunday when he got the bit between his teeth, so to speak, and just literally, you know, took winged foot, not so much apart, but when you consider that the scoring average was 74.90, he shot 67. I think it's the fifth highest differential in US Open history, but it wasn't so much that, like, his round was eight shots better than the scoring average for the field. It was the way he did it. It was the way he putted. I mean, not enough credit's been given to the way that he's putted, and the way that he puts is also controversial, because the arm lock putter is totally legal. But should it be legal? If they banned anchoring to the chest, why do they allow anchoring to the inside of the forearm? What I'm saying about that is, he has looked at all the rules of golf, all the parameters. He's taken everything to right to the edge to see what he can do completely legally with the rules as they are right now. He's adopted a scientific approach, and fair dues to him. He has pushed the boundary right to the edge, and I think now we're going to see a whole slew of followers who will be going into the gym and not, you know, scaling down and becoming this narrow-waisted and wide-shouldered, very athletic-looking golfer. I think we're going to see quite a lot of Bryson clones on the golf course. You know, 17 stone, that's what he is right now. He's 3 stone heavier than he was a year ago. And I think we're going to see a bit of that happening, because people like Bryson are influencers, and he has done something which is outstanding to allow others to follow.
Yeah, okay. Greg and Gary, thanks so much for joining us. Let's hope for a brilliant Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, and we'll be chatting to you soon. Thanks for joining us again, man.
Cheers. Cheers, Donica. Cheers, Marie.
Thanks, guys.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. Naturally good food packed with protein. Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Just a quick reminder that we've dietitian Orla Walsh in with us shortly. So if you have any nutrition questions, to get them in to 51552 or tweet at Game On 2FM. And we have a fantastic goodie bag from our sponsors, Green Farm, to give away, packed full of 100% natural, high protein white meat. So a great prize to win. So get them in with some great questions already. And I'm looking forward to finding out how we all end up like Bryce DeChambeau.
I was about to say, yeah, I'd say there'll be lots of people, as the lads say, clones of Bryson DeChambeau, so a bit of Green Farm would be a good way to start. Now, moving on to our next guest, the Federation of Irish Sport has asked the government to honour commitments made in the National Sports Policy from 2018 to 2027 for funding in order to ensure the survival of sport and physical activity in Ireland. CEO of the Federation, Mary O'Connor, joins us now. Mary, the call was made in the Federation's pre-budget submission today. How important is this funding, just taking into account the current situation with the pandemic?
Hi, Maria. Thanks for having me on. From a Federation of Irish Sport point of view, the pre-budget submission is nothing new. We do this annually, but obviously there's the added situation of COVID-19 and the challenges that's paying for the sport sector. What we're looking for in budget 2021 is just for the government to honour the commitments that they've made under Action 45 of the National Sports Policy, which is a double funding for sport over the lifetime of the policy up until 2027. And to be fair to the government, they have delivered on that promise in the first 2 years of the policy, and what we're looking for is for that to continue in the 2021. I think it's important to point out that it's the current funding is what we're looking at, and that's the amount of money that's going to be invested in the people and programs in this country. And we, as we live in the shadow of COVID-19 and we're going to be living in it for a while, we need to ensure that our programs to get people active are supported, and that we support our volunteers who are doing such tremendous work around the country.
Mary, is it hard to, you know, keep with that policy, you know, with the change in landscape? You know, what maybe was agreed in 2018, it's a different world now.
It's absolutely a different world, but it's even more important now that they do invest. It'll cost the government an awful lot more if they don't invest in the sports sector now. And to put it into context, Donica, 1.5 billion annually is the cost to the Irish health budget because of obesity and physical inactivity. According to the HSE, there's been a cost of 5.3 million euros spent on obesity surgery in this country in the last 5 years. So they're really stark figures. The money that we're talking about can make a huge amount of difference. And I think it's important that people understand that in an economic context, when you invest in sport in this country, when the government invests in sport in this country, for every 100 euros that they invest in sport, they get a return of 195 euros in associated taxes. So that must be remembered. When you invest in sport, not alone do you get a benefit in terms of people's health, but you also get an economic return, not just nationally, but in local economies as well, which is vital.
Mary, I think we're only kind of getting to grips with the fallout of COVID and trying to understand the impact it is going to have in the long term. And just from talking to the different sports governing bodies, how devastating an impact has it had so far on them?
I think it's important to point out that the resilience fund that was announced in June was really important for the sports sector. Sport Ireland have been administering that over the last while, and there's been an application process. That was vital. It was undeniably needed, and if we did, the sports sector couldn't avail of that, an awful lot of our national governing bodies that we think take for granted may fail to have existed. So going into 2021, they're going to need to be really supported, because they're still going to have to live with COVID-19. Their opportunity to generate revenue for themselves is going to be very limited. We all know the situation regarding attendances at games, but even sponsorship of events and so on, that's going to be very hard to come by. So what we're saying to government, when you invest in sport, you will get a return. And I think it's important to point out as well that the sports sector has really stepped up to the mark in terms of the national health emergency by its volunteers, but also in how the cessation of their activities to ensure that they were playing their part. And I think it's really important for everybody to know that sport wants to be part of the solution. And there's emerging evidence out there that if you have a body mass index of 30 or less, then if you get COVID-19, that the severity will be less. So that's important as well.
And Mary, that's probably something we don't think of. We think of it like the other industries, but it's the health benefits is what you're saying is the main example. And, you know, given that example of the 100 euros bringing back into the fund, 195 euros is a great example. But what about the unmeasurables, the things you can't? Like Katie Taylor's incredible fight a few weeks back, Sam Bennett last week, the lift that gives a nation.
Yeah, absolutely. The reputation of Ireland being a sports bad nation is only enhanced when our elite athletes achieve an international stage. And obviously for us to get the Katie Taylors and the Sam Bennetts, they have to start somewhere. They start at a local level and they emerge all the way up, and obviously by being dedicated and you know, with their talent and so on. But that is a really important point, because during COVID-19, our sports became really innovative in how they did outreach to people in the community through webinars and through video sessions to keep people active. And I think sport plays a huge role, and not just in the physical benefits, but also for people's mental health.
And Mary, we're going to move on to the importance of volunteers now, because without any of those grassroots sports, without any sport really, we wouldn't have any of it without the volunteers. And I know that the Federation are now looking for nominations for the Irish Sport Volunteers in Sport Awards. Will you tell us about them?
Yeah, the Federation of Irish Sport have long been champions of volunteers in sport. And just to throw another stat at you, there's about 450,000 volunteers in sport who volunteer every week, on average 3.5 hours. And just in terms of finance, that's worth 1.1 billion to the Irish Exchequer annually. That's mammoth. But what the Federation want to try and do is we're calling on people to nominate the volunteer who's had a huge impact on you as an athlete, or on your community, on your club, or on your organisation. The thing that we're finding about volunteers is they're very humble, they don't want to nominate, and we want people to be nominated. We want to recognise these people. We want to celebrate these people. There isn't an elite athlete, and I'm sure Dunica will speak to this. There's not an elite athlete out there that has not been positively influenced by a volunteer or grassroots sports. So what we're calling on tonight is for anybody who's involved in sport at a localised level, if they know somebody who has made a huge impact on them or their sport, that they nominate them to the Volunteer in Sport website, and we'll do our best to make sure that they're all recognised and celebrated.
Mary, it's a brilliant idea, because you're right. I was a product of the Irish system, and I was lucky enough to be around great coaches. But if it wasn't for the Finney Regans, the Ted Stacks, the guys that made me love my sport and actually just spent the time with me to set in good values, then, you know, I don't think I would have, you know, stayed even in the game.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that what you've just said, I suppose, is really it in a nutshell. And like, obviously, Dunica, you were an elite athlete, but there's people all over the country who are just participated in fun and had opportunities to make friends and meet people they never would have, only for volunteers in sport. And, you know, we the Federation of Irish Sport, supported by EBS, what we're trying to do is to ensure that these people are our everyday heroes. These people are hardly ever recognised in a meaningful way, and we want to do it on a national stage. And I think that our opportunity is to do one person per county, but obviously a cross-section of sports as well, because there's so many opportunities to play sport in this country, and we're so lucky.
Absolutely. I think it's the only thing that's going to get us through the winter, Mary. Well, that's what myself and Dunica were saying at the top of the show. Anyway, we're looking forward to Munster finals in November and Monday night rugby in the Pro 14. Thanks a million for taking our call. Mary O'Connor, from the Federation of Irish Sport. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much for having me on. Thank you.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein your way.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, just a final reminder to get your nutritional questions in for dietitian Orla Walsh. We'll be chatting to her very shortly. And for the best question, we have an incredible goodie bag, which is full of our brilliant sponsor, Green Farm products. They have a new, brand new snack pack, which is available in Tesco's from today. It's all 100% natural and high in protein. And Marie has kept it up there so that I couldn't get a nibble out of it. So it will come intact. But
Leave me any, that's why. If you went for a nibble, it'd be all gone.
You're not wrong. Get your questions in. We've some brilliant ones already, so if there's something you're concerned about or you want a bit of a helping hand with your training or preparation, get your questions into Orla and we'll be chatting to her very shortly.
Now, Dunica, we have been marvelling at the drama in county finals all around Ireland over the last few weeks. Well, further afield, there was plenty of final drama too. The New York final ended in a draw after extra time last Sunday between Sligo and St Barnabas, with St Barnabas fielding a team of born and bred New Yorkers. Liam Birmingham, Secretary of New York GAA, and Conor Hogan, St Barnabas captain, joins us now on the line. Liam, to you first. It sounds like you had an almighty battle in the final last weekend.
We did. It was a tremendous game of football, as much as anything else. And I mean, looking at the two teams, there was certainly no indication that one was a sort of an American-born team or anything like that. I mean, they were probably a little unlucky to lose, but I think we're all looking forward to the replay on Sunday. And I mean, just from our point of view, it was a validation of everything that's been happening over the last number of years with the kids that have been coming up to the minor board, and now to see them playing at that level was a tremendous accomplishment.
Liam, can you tell us about those past few years? Because, of course, we all get interested when we hear incredible stories like this, you know, that born and bred New Yorkers now playing, you know, and stemming the team. But what has gone on in your time there?
Well, I suppose really after 9/11 was really the sort of catalyst for the whole sort of change that immigration changed completely, the whole tone of immigration, and legal immigration into the U.S. has died out very much so after that. And then, a couple of years after that, then the Celtic Tiger took off and a lot of people that were here were moving back. And there was this recognition that prior to that, I suppose there was a lot of Irish players coming out for the summer, and the American kids weren't really getting a time and place to play. And at that stage, I mean, with the minor board, we set up our own program that we could set up development squads and start the American-born players coming up to the ranks. And look, it started slowly, and it started from under 6 right through to under 18. We set up the CYC, which is the equivalent of the FELA in Ireland,
which is where teams from all over the country, from and Canada, from US, from New York, Boston, Philadelphia, San Francisco, and they all come together in one city every year, and they're able, and they play against each other. And then, of course, we're going back to play at in the national Fela, and it's been. I mean, they've gotten to the level where a couple of years ago, they won the Division One Fela in Ireland by beating everybody by a considerable margin. And it's just, they've been tremendous athletes, but they've been playing at, not alone in CYC, they've been playing in Fela, they've been playing in the British Universities competitions, they've been playing in the World Games, and they've been, and the last 2 years we've been actually competing in the Sigerson Cup, so there are no strangers to playing against, you know, top class players, and they'll be getting the opposition, and now they know that the pathway is there for them to make a breakthrough at senior level, while before they weren't getting that opportunity because of the, let's say, the importation of players. Basically, that's what was happening. But now they know that if they put the time in and put the effort in, the opportunity is there for them to play at the highest level. And we see that even on the New York County team that plays in the Connacht Championship, that we had, obviously, the championship stopped for us early, but in training, there was, I think, 8 Irish-Americans on the New York panel.
Well, we have Conor Hogan on the line as well, the St. Barnabas team captain. Conor, tell us a little bit about how Gaelic football came into your life.
Gaelic football has been around in my life, especially not just me, but I'm from Woodlawn now in the Bronx, in Yonkers. I went to Barnabas Grammar School. My grandfather is one of the founders of the St. Barnabas Gaelic Football Club. So we've always had that sense of Gaelic football, not just in my life, in my family, but my friends and family too. And my, obviously a lot of us too are both first or second generation. Like my dad hails from Tipperary and grandparents from Roscommon and Mead. So there's always been that sense of Gaelic football ever since we started under 8s with the St. Barnabas Gaelic Football Club.
And tell us a little bit about the team now. I know there's a lot of brothers on it.
I can just name a few anyway. That there's obviously me and my brother Shane. We're probably the senior members of the team. We've been around since we were the junior A, and we were successful to come all the way up now. We've been senior for 5 years. We have the Rafferty's, who are Barnabas. We have the Matters, just to name a few, but there is a group of, it's all camaraderie. We're all a group of brothers, but we're all brothers all together anyway, in the long run.
Yeah, Conor, you're right. All the good teams always tend to be, but for us at home, it's always a reflection of where you're from, the importance of being around your club. But being in New York, it must be a massive part of your identity.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just, it's always great representing. I know myself too, me and my brother were able to, Shane has been continuing, I went back to the New York team, but it was great. Even the biggest honors were going to Crow Park, winning the World Games with an American-born team, especially New York, and also representing New York in the Connacht Finals, starting with him, and also other Americans. That's the big, what really gets you going is when the national anthem plays, and that's what really hits you off, especially when you're representing not just yourself, but also other Irish-Americans from New York and from all over the country.
Liam, are you expecting another cracker now in the final at the final replay at the weekend?
Absolutely. I mean, both teams could obviously say we let it go, but it was a great match. From what I heard from everyone, that it was one of the better matches they've seen in quite a long time. And I know we're looking forward to it. I can probably speak for Sligo. They're looking forward to it, too. It should be a real nail-biter again on Sunday.
Well, we will be checking up on how that goes. Liam Birmingham, Secretary of the New York County Board, and Conor Hogan, Captain of St. Barnabas, thanks so much for joining us and for sharing your stories with us as well.
Always good to hear, isn't it, Marie? One last plug. Orla Walsh is joining us shortly, so we have a host of nutritional questions. I'll be honest, Marie, I've just been texting them in myself. Just going to use it as a private chat with Orla to get all the best in nutrition, so looking forward to it.
Well, I have to say that there's some of them that are coming in and I absolutely cannot read them out. I reckon they're...
I'll read that one. I know the one you're on
about. They're pals of yours sending them in.
I don't think he's messing. Oh, are we on about Pat here?
We're on about Pat. Look, we cannot read. Well, you actually might not be. It's it's one that, okay, I'll leave it to you to put it to order because she is.
Well, we're delighted. She joins us now with thanks to our brilliant sponsors, Green Farm. Orla, how are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. We have a load of questions from our listeners on 51552, but I suppose the main thing we'll kick off with, Orla, if you don't mind, is the change of the season. Winter's coming. How do people adjust and make the right decisions around their nutrition to fuel them into the winter?
Well, I suppose a lot of people can feel hungrier in winter time, and it's just our body trying to keep us warm in the colder weather. So I guess, you know, keeping yourself healthy during the winter time is really responding to that hunger and trying to get fuller quicker and stay fuller for longer. And I suppose the important nutrients there would be the likes of proteins to make us feel full and keep us full, as well as fibres, which add, you know, bulk into our belly and, you know, make us feel like we had a proper meal and enough to eat. But I would say the combination of the two. So fibre comes from carbohydrates and it also comes from fruit and veg. So you want a nice balance between those two.
We have a message in here from Sean, and I think he's from Clare because he set up the banner. And I have to say that I would tend to be curious about this as well. Why have I gone from eating an occasional protein bar to eating about seven a day?
Do you actually think they're that nice? So, listen, I guess protein bars are great in some ways because they've got 20 grams of protein in them, which is generally enough to stimulate most people's muscles to their maximum. And that's a good thing. So it maximizes muscle breakdown and recovery and regrowth. You know, a protein is filling, so it makes us feel full and keep us full. And a lot of protein bars as well have high amounts of fiber. Now, the type of fiber within them can lead to excess gas in some people, so that's a downside. But I suppose with everything, it's a bit like the argument of I eat dark chocolate because I eat less chocolate when I eat it, and then you grow a taste for it, and then you're just like, actually, no, I can eat a fair amount of dark chocolate. So when it comes to protein bars, they're you know, a nice option for snack times, but because they, if you like the taste of them, you know, they're like any other food. If it's hyper palatable or tasty, you're just going to eat loads of it if you really like it.
Orla, we have a text in here to 51552. I've been eating an awful lot better and exercising well, but I've noticed a difference in my clothes, but how do I measure it, but not so much on the scales? Any tips for better measurement?
So I would encourage that person to check their waist circumference, because it sounds to me like if they've improved the quality of their nutrition and are exercising more, that they might have increased their muscle mass and reduced their fat mass. And that's reflective in their clothes, because their clothes are looser. And one area that we can measure that's quite accurate of whether we're gaining or losing fat tissue is our waist. So I'd encourage the person to measure their waist, not that often, and maybe every few weeks. A good idea is measuring just above the belly button. So if you want to be pedantic about it, it's halfway point between the hip and the lowest rib. But just above the belly button, and just do that every few weeks, and do it first thing in the morning, because our bellies do expand as the day goes on.
Okay, great tip. We've a message here from Pat, and I've noticed it with a few of my teammates. People do get interested in certain areas, and Pat wants to know, how do I lose my man boobs? And I've noticed that with teammates before, that they get conscious of certain areas of your body, and you try to target that. Orla, is there any advice? How best do you target it as a part of an overall plan?
Well, the thing is that our body reflects our genetics a lot. Now, that person may or may not have excess fat tissue there. Like you said, people tend to hone in on one area of their body and, you know, criticize that a little bit more so than others, and doesn't necessarily reflect that there is actually excess fat there. Sometimes the excess fat can grow on that area in a man when he has gained a lot of fat and when there's fat in and around his liver. But, you know, I think it's important for people to realize that you can't really spot reduce And you can't really reduce fat in any one particular area. You know, you can reduce fat across your body, but you can't pinpoint. And anyone who says that you can is wrong.
Well, there's lots of people going to avoiding the gym and doing long runs. James from Kildare has texted in and said, what's the best food to eat after a full marathon or a half marathon for quick recovery?
A Green Farm pack of delicious high protein meat. Did I mention that there's 25 grams in every pack?
Well, that wouldn't go. That would be a part of it, all right, because it's the 3 hours. Really, you want to refuel, rehydrate, and repair. The repair is the protein, and ideally, you need at least 20 grams of protein at that sitting. But you also need fluids and a bit of carbohydrates. So, you know, if you were to team up your green pack chicken, you could have a sandwich and a glass of water afterwards. But you might also choose something simple like a recovery drink, such as a pint of milk and a couple of pieces of fruit, because, you know, again, that would provide you what you're after, which is the protein to repair, the carbohydrates to refuel, and the water to rehydrate.
Orla, sorry, no, we are tight on time, but just people looking at weight gain during COVID, what's the best to ignite our metabolism?
Well, I suppose it's to firstly acknowledge that a lot of people have reported weight gain during the COVID and during the lockdown, and more women than men, but it's around 40% of people from last statistics. The important thing is to make sure you're well hydrated. So that's incredibly important. And make sure you're getting adequate protein in each of your meals. Again, the 20 to 40 grams that I'm talking about, breakfast, lunch and dinner. And then there are specific nutrients that you want to make sure that you're getting. And you will achieve them with a very balanced diet. But it's a lot of minerals, so the likes of iron and copper. Iodine and calcium, which, you know, you can get through dairy. Magnesium, which you can get through green plants, and biotin, which is a B vitamin, which you can get especially through fish, pork or sesame seeds.
Always solid advice. Orla, thanks so much for joining us. Our winner is Pat with his brilliant question, and, you know, I know we can giggle about it, but man boobs are to be addressed and they're important to talk about. Tara Stewart is up next.